This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get you updated with headlines. Well, as you know, yesterday, Adrian Peterson went on the injured reserve list for the Arizona Cardinals. We'll see how his future goes. Probably not going to be in Arizona. Don't know if he's going to be back next year. A couple retirements in the National Football League. Reggie Bush retired. Jerome Felton, the fullback, retired. Wallace Gilberry, a Cincinnati Bengal defensive end, retired. Those three retirements just basically announced in the National Football League. As far as the Seahawks, they go in with the possibility of Bobby Wagner being able to play. We'll see about that. They're going to test him out today to see how that hamstring holds up. If it holds up well enough, he'll be able to play. Looks doubtful right now for K.J. Wright with the concussion. You know that Najee Jones is not going to be able to play because of an ankle injury. That'll probably carry on for a few more weeks. But nevertheless, big game tomorrow coming up against the Los Angeles Rams, a team that comes in here reasonably healthy. Yeah, they lost Kevon Webster, a cornerback with an Achilles tear. He's out for the rest of the season, but they come in here with just about everybody else. Andrew Whitworth is going to be able to play. They've got pretty much everybody that's all set to go. So big game coming up for the Seahawks going against the Rams. Two games this afternoon. The Detroit Lions are going to take on the Chicago Bears, seeing if there's an outside shot that maybe the Lions can win three in a row. I mean, the Bears right now, very vulnerable. And then later on today, the big game is going to be the AFC West. It's going to be the Los Angeles Chargers at the Kansas City Chiefs. A game that could determine which team is going to be there. Raiders, of course, losing in Kansas City last week. Chiefs have the edge because they are at home, but also that's a team right now that has given up a lot of big plays, and the Chargers have won basically seven of the last nine games, which has put them right back in the race after an 0-4 start. In Pittsburgh, news reasonably good on the injury front. Joe Hayden coming back from that fractured or the fibula injury that he had. They still have to have a little bit of worry about Smith-Schuster. He's got the hamstring injury. A lot of question marks right now for the Patriots. Alan Branch is not going to play with a knee injury, but they have like 8-9 players that are listed as questionable. Most should be able to play. Those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Dave Grosby. And Dave, are you at your new location for today? Because I know you got a promotion coming up.
That's actually for the game tomorrow, John.
Well, that's for the game tomorrow. Okay, and repeat where that's going
to
be.
That's for the game tomorrow from noon to 4 at Dave and Buster's in Auburn.
Okay, that should be good.
Well, of course it'll be good.
And
video games and football, what beats that?
I know. I mean, this is going to be a good weekend. I mean, just I'm happy that there's some Saturday football. You know, two games today starting at 1:30. That'll be good. I mean, it's NFC and then division games. That makes it interesting. Not necessarily to see the Bears because they're putrid to watch, but, it does give you a chance to take a look and see Matthew Stafford and whether he has an outside chance of making the playoffs.
Them, you got the college bowl games start today as well. Four of them being played, including an interesting one in Las Vegas. College basketball is up and running full steam. So, yes, I would agree with you. A whole lot going on as we barrel down on Christmas.
No doubt about it. And, of course, one thing that's going to be kind of fascinating to see is that, you do have some things going on in college football. Really this week, the start of recruiting can really heat up. I know the Huskies hit on two wide receivers. What's your thoughts on what happened yesterday in the last 48 hours, where Jimmy Lake was able to get an enhanced contract to stay, and it looks like Alex Grinch very well might be leaving Washington State as a defensive coordinator?
Yeah, I see Ohio State is interested in him. It's the usual attrition that goes on in college football, and it is tough timing right now. As you pointed out, it's one of the open recruiting periods, I believe. I have a hard time keeping track of all that stuff, but it's not surprising that Alex Grinch would be in high demand. He has done a really good job with that Washington State defense, and I'm not surprised that Ohio State, among others, are looking at him. Those are schools that can pay an enormous amount of money, much more than Washington State can pay. As for Jimmy Lake, Washington has already suffered a little bit of attrition in their coaching staff, so any guys that they can keep, they want to keep. But on the other hand, both coaches, it's not necessarily a bad thing when you lose top-flight assistants. In fact, it is, in a way, it helps you to attract more top-flight assistants because you can point out that, hey, this can be a gateway for you to get a better job. You come here and your career will take off. And so it's a dual-edged sword. It can be troublesome when it happens during recruiting season, but on the other hand, it kind of shows that that, hey, you know, you come here, you'll be in demand. So it's not necessarily a bad thing.
No doubt about it. But what a blow that would be to Washington State to lose Alex Grinch. I mean, boy, he came in and within a couple years, 3 years, turned this thing into, at least defensively, statistically, the second best defense in the conference.
Yeah, it would be. I mean, he's done it all there, and they're probably going to lose him. But, again, it's more than just one coach that does it, and they shouldn't have a problem finding a replacement. And as good as the defense has been, they're still a team built with offense, though. Their bowl game, it's going to be interesting to see how they perform. They've already cut loose two wide receivers from that team and have had Mike Leach going to Tennessee rumor to deal with. It's always hard to figure out how that will impact teams when it comes to bowl games. We shall see when the Cougars play in that Holiday Bowl.
No doubt. But it's been a fun year to watch Washington State. And also, you know, it's a break in many ways that the Tennessee screw-up at least allowed, you know, the return of Mike Leach. Because, boy, that would be devastating if he was going to be out.
Well, it would be. And their president there is, and look, it's still a fluid situation, although there aren't any other jobs open at this point in time. But it's still a fluid situation for Leach and Washington State. When you have the athletic director that hired you leave, it's always, it depends on how the new guy feels, if he's going to have the power, if the team president or the school president will have the power. They're already paying Leach, I believe, as much as they can pay him. And he's already come through in the way that they want him to, with tremendous success. So it's a dicey sort of situation there. I wouldn't be worried about the players coming and going. I mean, that's been a part of the whole deal with Mike Leach, and it hasn't impacted them on the field at all. But it will be interesting to see how Washington State plays next year. They got a quarterback in place. They can be a team that can win shootouts. They're still set up to be that sort of team. We'll see, though, that they're losing a lot on defense, and it will be hard, no matter who the coaches are, to be as good as they were next year on defense.
No question, and that's the challenge that I think. But I think the one thing you can see, at least with Washington, even though, again, they will lose maybe more players on defense to the pros, they just seem to be in a good spot. I mean, they've been able to maintain a good coaching staff. I mean, what, they lose one offensive coach and they get a very good offensive coach back. I mean, there seems to be a stability now that Chris Peterson has set up there that, you keep adding good players in recruiting and you just keep on getting better.
Well, that was the only question about Chris Peterson would be, it was obvious he could coach because of his great success at Boise State, but that was done with primarily quote-unquote three-star players, and he would get the most out of them and to be successful at the next level, which Washington certainly is, although Boise State has won 10 games this year and is playing in a bowl game. It was going to be, can he get the four-star? Can he get the top recruits from up and down the West Coast? And that question has been answered. The answer is yes. So I agree with you. Washington's in a good spot to withstand any coaching losses whatsoever because of the success they've had on the field, the reputation that Chris Peterson has.
No doubt. No, and that's it's fun to watch. Of course, now we switch gears and go to the pros and, of course, the Seahawk game tomorrow. I guess there is some hope that they might be able to have K.J. Wright out there in the game because they're going to test him out with a hamstring today. They list him as questionable if he passes the test today. Bobby Wagner, I'm sorry. Yeah, K.J. Wright's he's doubtful and not going to be able to go. Although, I guess he does have one more concussion protocol test, but I tend to think that, if you say doubtful, pretty much there's anybody listed as doubtful, there's only been one doubtful that's been able to make it this year. So you'd think that it's not going to happen.
No, I agree with you. I don't think it's going to happen either, and we'll see if it happens with Bobby Wagner. I think it's one of the things, and it's always difficult to read the tea leaves because that's all you really get. He did not participate in practice yesterday, but he did do some things running around a little bit. So it was probably the first day they tested his hamstring at all. I have no doubt this will absolutely be what they're saying it's going to be, that he'll go out there for pregame warm-ups on Sunday, and at some point if the team doctor or coach or trainer or whatnot will come over to him and say, well, what do you think? And they will make the decision then. I think that, it's a negative sign, of course, where a guy has been dealing with a bad hamstring, actually had to pull himself out of that Jacksonville game and never did go back in. Hamstrings don't get better after 4 days of rest. They just don't. It's a question of, how much pain can he play with to an extent and what the risk is of tearing it. And I imagine those are both definite factors going into the game. But I do believe that it'll be an absolute game time decision for him, and it'll be whether or not he thinks he can go or not. It's obviously a huge difference for the Seahawks. If he can go, he's a key to what they're going to try and do on defense. And, you know, it's more than just not having a – they've got a good replacement for him, but that winds up impacting special teams, and that's not an area you want impacted against the Rams either. So, obviously, for a lot of reasons, for him to be able to play would be big. Even if he's not at 100%, if he's at 80%, it's still better than the alternative, in my opinion.
No doubt. But big, big game, and I know there's a lot of pessimism, and naturally so. Even more so, I guess, than the game a couple weeks ago against the Philadelphia Eagles, because now, you know, the team is missing now possibly one or two more Pro Bowl elements from that defense, and, you know, the running game still hasn't gotten any better for the most part.
They're certainly missing one element from that defense. I mean, there's no question about that. The running game remains the big mystery. I mean, you know, what did Thomas Rawls do or not do? And we talked about it yesterday on our show. And the fact that Eddie Lacy, you know, you just have to view as a bust at this point, as a guy that they don't believe can do anything for him, which is unfortunate as well. You now got a guy, Mike Davis, who's been a practice squad player, who's been a cast off from the San Francisco 49ers, and you're waiting with bated breath to see if he can play a little bit banged up. He's been banged up in every game he's played, but you know, that's the deal. If they're going to have a running game in this game, obviously it's going to be Russell Wilson who does it and is going to have to do it. It goes without saying that he needs to maintain all the stuff that he's doing for them to have a chance in this game. And it also goes without saying that if they're within two scores going into the fourth quarter, much like the Dallas Cowboys of old with Roger Staubach, it doesn't matter what kind of a game Russell Wilson has had going into the fourth quarter, something happens to him in the fourth quarter. So as long as you can keep it competitive till then, you got to like your chances. And you know, Goff has been real impressive, but this will be it won't be the first time in this environment. He obviously played the game here last year, but with this kind of pressure on him, it will be a little bit different. I think that's an edge that they certainly had with Carson Wentz in Philadelphia coming in, is that they really did not know what the experience is like at CenturyLink. The Rams are different. They're a division opponent. They know it. Most of them played multiple games up here, and Goff, as I pointed out, played a game here last year, so it's not his first game here. That's when it seems to have the most jarring impact on players. And then from the Rams' standpoint, I mean, you can look at them from that Week 5 game and argue that they're probably a better team from that point forward, even though they've had a few injury losses as well. They've gotten a few guys back. Whereas from the Seahawks' standpoint, that was the first game they played without Cliff Averill. But they've lost, obviously, the guys you mentioned, Chancellor, Sherman, K.J. Wright, and possibly Bobby Wagner going into the game. So it's a tall task, but when you've got a quarterback who's got the fourth-quarter magic going on, it doesn't really matter how you get there. Just as long as you get to the fourth quarter within a couple of scores, you got a shot, and that's what they got to be shooting for tomorrow, in my opinion.
Yeah, no doubt. And, of course, the crowd's going to play a big role in that. It doesn't look like it's going to be as rainy as it was scheduled to be, which, of course, that's good for me and anybody who's on the sidelines. I'm happy about that. Still going to be a little chilly. But, that's going to be the big challenge because, you know, a very complicated type of offense, a lot of motion, a lot of extra, you know, juice is put in there by Sean McVay, who's, you know, constantly talking to his quarterback before the 15-second cutoff, making sure that he's all set for everything. That's going to be difficult if the crowd adheres to what you expect them to do.
Well, look, it's going to be very difficult for the crowd to be screaming with the usual intensity. You know, and you may talk about this all you want, but it's going to be an adjustment to see him snapping the ball that quickly into plays. You know, you don't see much of that. Like I said before, though, I mean, this is not something that is unknown to Jared Goff. He played a game up here before, so they got an idea of what the crowd noise will be like, and we'll see if that's a factor. I think special teams has got a chance to be a bigger factor in this game. If the Seahawks can win that battle, that they got a great shot, and not many teams win that battle against the Rams with their accomplished group there, coached very well by Fossil. If the Rams win that part of the battle, too, it makes it even more difficult. So I keep an eye on special teams as being a pretty good factor tomorrow, too.
Well, it should be good. So now what is on the Dave Grosby schedule here in the next 2 days?
Well, we got Seattle U basketball tonight at Key Arena against Portland of the West Coast Conference, by the way, and they're doing a little promotion, if I can mention it.
Yeah.
Four tickets and a $20 concession voucher for just $40. If you type in the code word family, when you go to Ticketmaster, they expect a good crowd for Portland. There are a lot of Portland Pilots alums in the area, so should be a fun game. There's a nice piece on Jim Hayford in the Seattle Times, too, about what he went through going through coaching against his old team, Eastern Washington. So you got that going on, and then the party at Dave & Buster's tomorrow for the game starting at noon.
Well, that sounds like it's going to be a good weekend, and so enjoy yourself. Enjoy the game. I know you'll do a good job tonight, and we will talk again on Monday.
Sounds good.
Okay, that's Dave Grosby, and of course, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Tara in Mercer Island. Tara, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
What are the three keys for victory for the Seahawks tomorrow?
Keys are making sure that first you don't make the mistakes that give self-inflicted wounds, where, like, for example, you look at last week, four different offensive linemen got penalties. Can't have that happen. You can't give up the big punt return. That can't happen. I mean, you can't have some of the big plays allowed on defense. You basically just got to minimize all those, much like they did in the Philadelphia Eagle game. That's key number one. Number two, you can't fall behind, because now if you do, particularly with the injuries at the linebacker position, you know, that gives the incentive and the opportunity for Todd Gurley to run over you. And if you're down, say, 10-0, you may not be able to come back if they run the ball successfully. And then number three, to make sure that you know, Russell Wilson gets a little bit of a running game from Mike Davis and J.D. McKissick, and then he just handles everything and tries to take a lead into the fourth quarter. They can do that. They can win.
Yeah, my keys are, I think that we need to pressure Carson Wentz and pressure the Rams quarterback, because he's not making all the plays. Like, the coach is doing that for them. So if we get in his head, I think it will be a long game for him.
Yeah. Well, and to your point, you look at what happened in the first game. I know that they got 375 yards. I know that Jared Goff passed for 260. They were able to move the football, but they didn't do well in the red zone, and they made five turnovers. And so when you have a five-turnover game, you're not going to win that. And so they're going to, I'm sure, play better than they did in the first game, but still, it's tougher on the road with a young quarterback going against still a seasoned defense.
That's a good point you made. I also think that Russell, the Seahawks defense needs to give Russell Wilson a chance. Now it's kind of switching. The defense is getting more older, and Russell Wilson's in his prime. And if you just give him a chance, you've seen in all the close game, he's almost won it for us. And we need to stop committing stupid penalties. The Rams are another team that are young and cocky and like to get in the players' heads. And you saw what happened in the game last week. Mm-hmm. A lot of penalties and fines.
Right, exactly. They can't do that. This is something now where they've got to be, you know, doing the best they can to maximize everything that they do and get the best going.
Thank you for taking my call.
Tara, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Travis. Hey, Travis.
Hey, John. How are you doing today?
Doing good, doing good.
Hey, I have a question. I've been a football fan since the late 60s in Baltimore, and one thing that always had my question was, why do they not track the statistics of how much effectively a penalty costs you? For example, you have a offensive line holding on a play where the quarterback has tossed it and made a 30-yard gain. So you have an effectively a 40-yard loss, not a 10-yard loss.
Right.
Now, why don't they show that? Why don't they give that statistic?
Buried somewhere, but they don't emphasize it. You're right about that. I mean, you know, I know this is a Bill Parcells thing, but they always call it the hidden stats. And you would include the lost yards from penalties. You would include some of the bad plays on special teams. Those were some of the things that would be in there. But, yeah, that's something that does need to be emphasized. I go right to the example. I was trying to go through and see the yardage allowed by the penalties that taken away by Jermaine Ifedi's 17 penalties. But no, that's a very good stat, because, I mean, it's a hidden stat, and it's a Bill Parcells type of stat. But you can find them in some places, but it's not as pronounced as it probably should be.
And I'm sure that the at the end of the season, the team is looking at that when they review players to see how effective they are.
Mm-hmm. No, I would agree with that. No, that's definitely part of what you want to try to see, and you make evaluations based on that. But that's the thing. I mean, the mistakes, and this team leads the league in penalties by far. It's not even close, as a matter of fact. And they come now. You're going to get the defensive calls because you got an aggressive secondary, the way that they play, particularly at the cornerback position. That's just a given. I mean, you just have to accept that. But some of the bad offensive penalties, and then just some of the dumb penalties, they cannot afford to do.
And it's not only offense. It is, some of it is defense. But, you have certain penalties which are going to happen, and you accept them, whether they're an offense, defense, or special teams.
Mm-hmm.
But overall,
no, I agree.
Some of them really cost you a lot more than people look at in the paper the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I thank you very much, John.
Travis, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Ken in Tacoma. Hey, Ken.
Yeah, John, what's the status of Shedd? I thought I heard a while back he was about ready to return.
It's still probably about a week away. I think that they're down to the point where next week they're going to make the final decision on him. Seems to be pretty positive, but I think they're just being very cautious. So I think he'll probably, I don't know if he's going to be activated for the Dallas game. If not, it very well could be for the last game of the season against Arizona. But I think it's going to be more next week. And, right now the urgency isn't there for him to be there because they're at least healthy enough at the cornerback position. But, I think maybe more next week and certainly not going to be this week.
Yeah, well, he kind of impressed me last year, and I thought our defense could use all the help it could get. So.
Well, that's the funny thing. It's like, here's a team that's lost Richard Sherman, had a 1 week absence of Shaquille Griffin, but still, I mean, Jeremy Lane, who has started, and making $5.75 a year, he's now the fourth corner. So at least they're still deep at that cornerback position.
Oh, that's good. Okay, thank you, John.
All right, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jet. Jet, how are you?
Dr. John, how you doing today?
Good. 5 wins. Did you ever anticipate that for the New York football Jets?
Well, no, we certainly didn't, and 2017 has been loaded with surprises. But as in typical Jet fashion, that McNown injury was just a game late, and basically they're going to have a dollar short in the draft because that's going to push them back towards the end of the top 10 pick.
Right.
That fifth win just really pushes them pretty far up the ladder there. So it's just too bad it didn't happen a game earlier, like against the Chiefs. But I think we're going to see what we're expecting for the Jets the rest of the way out. And I think we're going to be hanging tight somewhere in the bottom half of the 10th, in the top 10 picks.
I could agree with that. But, yeah, that's the thing that's so weird is that, they exceeded expectations certainly with the 5 wins. I don't think anybody really thought that was going to happen. I think Todd Bowles showed that he's a pretty good coach. I mean, being able to manage what's not there and still get 5 wins out of it. I think you can see he's developing some good young players. That's encouraging. Now it's just a matter of getting a quarterback. But this goes to what I'll say, and of course, this is what's going to help you out, Jet, is the fact that now Bryce Petty can go out there and lose. Because I know that everybody takes a position, what do you have to lose by not playing the quarterbacks? Well, remember, they see these guys in practice all the time. And if they know they're not good, you don't want to put them out there. And there was never a thought to put Bryce Petty or Christian Hackenberg out there at any point this season. I mean, you saw a week ago that Todd Bowles says, nope, Josh McCown's our quarterback. But then, of course, when he gets hurt, that changes the equation. So now they have to go ahead and see what they can do without, with Bryce Petty. And I'm sure Bryce Petty is going to live up to your expectations and lose, baby, lose.
Well, we anticipated this in the preseason, wondering how long McNown was going to last for. Not necessarily because of a qualitative standpoint, but just from a health standpoint, given that offensive line that he's running around behind. And I'm surprised it took him as long as it did, but it did eventually catch up to him. So now we'll execute the rest of the plan, but again, it's just one win too late, unfortunately. But, I'm just wondering if and when they're ever going to unwrap the bubble wrap off of a Hackenberg.
I don't think it's ever going to happen.
You really don't think they're going to play him at all?
No. And again, I mean, you should be able to appreciate this more than anything else because, Tim Tebow was on this team, and Tim Tebow was terrible. And, of course, terrible is terrible. Putting him on the field is not going to make him better. I mean, yeah, you can say, well, how's he not get better with experience? Well, if it's not there, it's not there. I just get the feeling it's not there with Christian Hackenberg.
There's got to be something glaringly wrong because they just seem to have absolutely no confidence in him.
Yeah, you know why? He's not good. It's like you have no confidence because the guy's no good.
Well, you know, that may very well be part of the problem, John, but at least we'd like some confirmation of it. I don't know. What do you think about two questions? What's going to be interesting going forward is, this nonsense with Mo Wilkerson.
Yeah.
He's obviously worn out his welcome from a playing capacity, but it's clear that he's checked out. He's worn out his welcome from an emotional capacity as well. Do you think he's going to suit up again the rest of the year?
Debatable. I mean, they're paying him money, so they should be able to play him. I guess it's not a matter of showcasing him because, again, I don't know who's going to take the chance on him. But particularly
but the
making the money
is, I mean,
he's
making. Do you want him coming back in the clubhouse on a daily basis?
Yeah.
This is the concern, especially when you're trying to build such a positive attitude and you're trying to, get Derek Lee basically, or Darren Lee basically on the right track as well.
Mm-hmm.
So do you really want to see that that horror show playing out in front of the younger guys? You know, they may be better served just,
I'm just stunned. It's like, how can a guy making $15 million be that irresponsible?
Boy, you know, especially the way he was, just griping about his contract situation for 2 years going into it.
Right.
I mean, he was just a sourpuss going in. And he finally gets his payday, and he acts up worse than he did beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Or as far as we know. It may have been like this before with Ryan, but he just didn't care, because he just had his own set of rules. But, they knew he was a problem. They kind of looked the other way, and he has not lived up to that contract whatsoever. And given his attitude going in, to me, I just don't understand it.
Right.
I really don't. But, boy, there's a serious disconnect there. And let me ask you this. What I don't understand is, okay, if they keep him on they got to pay him for next year.
Right.
If they keep him on the roster 3 days going into the season, so they got to release him by March. But what is this June 1st designation thing, and they can save more
that's a,
money?
That's a cap thing.
Cap.
The June 1st designation is that you can cut a player, but technically he's going to stay on your books until June 1st. Then what happens is you can just take the proration from this year, on the contract, and then the proration that will be for the future will go into the next year.
Oh, I see. So therefore, they just can't use that money for 2018.
No, you can use it for 2018. It's just that
not until after he's off the books.
Yeah, I mean, what happens is that because again, you let him go and you designate him June 1st. So
right.
When you designate him June 1st, you still have to include in your cap until June 1st his base salary.
Right.
Then
right, right,
technically okay. He goes on the waiver wire. Although again, he can sign with anybody as soon as he's designated. So but what you do is that instead of carrying and taking the entire hit on the cap, you now push whatever's remaining. You take this year and then the remaining years in the future years.
That makes sense. I got you now. Okay. Thanks for explaining that, because I was confused about that.
Yeah.
But they've got so much money under the salary cap, I don't think
that's
going to affect
problem.
Them. They're probably better off pushing some of it out to next year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Last question. What about Morton's comments about they saying, we kind of threw in the white towel and just worked on our running game in that fourth quarter against the Broncos?
Yeah, at least he's honest. I guess that's good. But, again, sometimes being honest doesn't sound good.
For it, which is unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. But when you're down like that in a 23-0 game like that and have no hope and you have no starting quarterback and no backup quarterback because now you got Bryce Petty out there, I guess, that's – and again, this confirms what I've been saying all along. I mean, neither of these quarterbacks are any good. I mean, you take shots at them in the draft and, hey, they just don't work out. And just because if you see them, then you see how bad they really are. Remember, the coaches see them in practice every day. And so, you put Petty out there toward the end of the game, it was a big zero.
Yeah, obviously, because they were trying to throw the ball around when he replaced McNown earlier on. But, I definitely think you don't – because that offensive line just was not performing.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely don't think you want to see another Bryce Petty windmill like we saw against the Dolphins last year.
Right.
But, John, it'll be the last time I guess we'll talk until after the New Year.
No, we'll be back on New Year's Eve, on the Saturday before New Year's. So.
Well, unfortunately, we'll be back east then, so I'm not going to be able to catch you until after the season. So. I want to wish you and Mrs. C the best of holidays, and also throw a holiday shout-out to your staff because you got some great guys working for you.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Jet, enjoy yourself. Have a great holiday.
Tank Jets.
Yeah, go ahead. Exactly. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Ed in Seattle. Hey, Ed.
Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning.
I want to talk about kickers.
Yeah.
I was down to the pro shop to put a lead into this the other day, and I said, do you got any Blair Walsh jerseys? They laughed.
Did they really? That's great.
Blair Walsh jerseys hang on the hanger, either to the right or to the left. The point being is that if you compare Hauschka, which I think was one of the greatest mistakes they made in the off season, trading Hauschka and getting Malik McDowell, Hauschka is 22 of 25 total field goals,
mm-hmm.
15 of 17 up to 49 yards, 7 of 8 greater than 50 yards. Walsh is 20 for 27 total.
Right.
20 of 26 up to 49 and doesn't have a field goal past 50 because they got no confidence in him.
Mm-hmm.
Zuerlein, who's playing for the Rams, is 36 of 38 total.
Right.
30 of 31 up to 49 and 6 of 7 at 50 and 148 points. The big cry all season long is said, well, we had to trade Hauschka because of the money. Well, points on the board is money. Right. Losing ball games like Walsh lost against the Redskins is money. And having a guy like Blair Walsh, when you got no confidence, Pete, in his last week's Monday morning coaching conference said, just glazed over the fact when he was asked about Blair Walsh. It's obvious that they've got no confidence in him. That's why they got to come up with ludicrous plays from 35 yards and further. And it's about time we get, if we don't get him now, in the offseason, they get a kicker.
Yeah, I think you can accept that they'll do that.
At 42 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
Pete Gogolak was one of the first soccer-style kickers. There's got to be somebody walking the street somewhere that could kick better than Blair Walsh. And it gotta
but right now,
the
they may not be on the street to have anybody better than
no
Blair
good,
Walsh.
No confidence. He's useless.
Yeah, well, and then that's, I think that's something they'll have to now address in the offseason. I just don't know where the viable options are right now.
There's
got to
be a viable option out there. You got a whole Sounders team. There's got to be one guy that can kick a field goal.
Well, remember, it's not a matter of kicking a field goal. It's a matter of kicking 27 field goals. He's had 27 attempts.
Well, I'll tell you, when you can't make a 38-year-old yard field goal like he could in the last game,
mm-hmm.
and it cost them 3 points going into the half where they could have got a little momentum going, you just don't have any faith in this guy.
No, that's true.
Blair Walsh, no matter how you slice it, is lousy.
Mm-hmm. He's had, and particularly in the last three losses.
He kicks them straight to the right or straight to the left.
Mm-hmm.
He can't kick him straight, and he can't kick him far enough. And again, when you go down to the pro shop, you go down to the pro shop and ask for a Blair Walsh jersey. You'll be laughed out of the store.
Well, I'll tell you, it's like if you I would imagine they're not selling too quickly right now.
They don't even have them.
Wow.
Thank you.
Okay, Ed, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Mr. Clayton, fantastic, and merry, merry Christmas to you, and of course, always Mrs. Clayton.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So, Mr. Clayton, have you had the long talk with Santa to make sure he's got Mrs. Clayton all taken care of?
I always try to take care of Mrs. Clayton, just make sure that I haven't had any conversations with Santa, but again, it's like still trying to take good care of her, as always.
Well, I understand that, but double check with Santa now.
Okay.
Make sure he didn't miss anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mr. Clayton, what a great time of the year this is. You know, there's so many wonderful sporting things going on. You've got bowl games starting up. You've got the Boise State and Oregon playing in a bowl today. You've mm-hmm. got basketball, college basketball starting to heat up. You have Notre Dame is on TV today with against Indiana. Notre Dame happens to have the player, or will soon become the player of the year in college basketball this year.
The what?
A gentleman by the name of Colsey Bonds.
Oh, please.
He is all old, Mr. Clayton. Outstanding basketball player.
Okay, but he's player of the year, right? Come on.
Yes, sir.
We're tending to exaggerate on this.
Preseason, pretty much inside track, is player of the year in college basketball.
Uh-huh.
He is that good, Mr. Clayton.
Okay.
But talking about players of the years and stuff, of course, the Irish have a bowl game New Year's Day. Not bad for a team that was 4-8 last year, Mr. Clayton, and
right.
got so close this year to being in the playoff championship series.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They just ran out of gas.
Or they weren't good enough, one of the two.
No, Mr. Clayton, they were good enough. Yes, they were. They just melted down in November, which was heartbreaking, of course, but that's okay. We're talking about today the 29th unanimous All-American at Notre Dame, Quentin Nelson, Mr. Clayton.
Okay.
The best offensive lineman in the country this year, no doubt.
He was good.
Let's just say, he should have gotten the award for the best lineman of the year, and they gave it to some goofball defensive lineman who plays in the second-level football.
Uh-huh.
I can't even say his name, but so be it. Mr. Clayton, the Irish are going to have two linemen drafted around the top 10 of the draft this year.
Okay.
Seattle sure could use an all-world guard, Mr. Clayton.
But I don't think they want to be drafting in the top 10, and a guard you don't take in the top 10 for the most part.
Well, I don't know, Mr. Clayton. I know historically, but all I can say is Quentin Nelson at 6'5", 330 pounds, the 29th unanimous All-American, sure would be an interesting look, Mr. Clayton.
But, yeah, they're not drafting in the top 10. They got a winning record.
I know he's going to go 14th to the Dolphins.
Okay.
McClinchy, the other half of the dynamic road graders for the offensive line at Notre Dame, is going to go 11th to the Cardinals, McShay predicts. But we'll see. Mr. Clayton?
Yes?
I hope that next year, when the Irish are strong and making it to the playoffs, we can convince you it's time to get on board, Mr. Clayton.
It may take some time.
Oh, don't you worry. We've been trying to do this with you for years.
Right.
We have not given up, nor shall we ever.
Nope. But you know the one thing I got to say?
Save your soul.
But have a great Christmas.
Touchdown, Jesus, and go on.
Have a great one. Thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Coming up next, let's get a preview of the Los Angeles Rams' Gary Klein. Nice enough to join us from the LA Times. He's coming up next. It's John Clayton.